But basically, the show writers did this for Aria, Maisie Williams, if I'm not mistaken. Like, she wanted him on the show. I think that was, like, why, or at least why said. Yeah. Huh.
Either so that if it sucks, they can blame it on Maisie. Perfect. It sounds like them. You know, when George told us about Ed Sheeran. Fuck you guys. Like, come on.
That was a good one.
Anyway. Hello, welcome back to Vassals of Kingsgrave for our Season 7 Dragoncast reviews. We're here to talk about Season 7, Episode 1, Dragonstone. A lot to talk about. My name is Adam, also known as Drowned Snow on the podcast of Ice and Fire Forums. And we got a nice crew here tonight, a little packed. I'm joined by...
I get to go first. This is Greg, Claudius the Fool on the forums.
I get to go second, and I'm Casey Blue Eye Queen on the forums.
I'm Michal Inkezrain on the forums.
This is Katie, Lady Griffin on the forums.
I'm Paul, and I get to be fifth, and I'm Sir Dineral on the forums.
Sixth, Donna, Tang Donna on the forums.
Lucky number seven, Varley on the forums.
Yes, so we're here to talk about the premiere of Season 7, which just aired, just finished a few minutes ago, so it's all still very fresh for us. A lot to unpack. So we're going to start off with lemon cakes. Greg, what would you give this episode?
I'd give it a solid 4.25. No problems. I was happy to meet everybody again, and I loved pretty much every scene except for a couple, you know, little nitpicks. But no, I really liked it. It's one of my favorite episode ones.
I gave it a 4. Because I thought it was really awesome. It's basically the same thing as Greg. It was the opener, and I'm excited to see everybody again. And it was actually really good, so I really enjoyed watching it.
I'm going to leave some room and go for like a 3.5, 3.75, just because I thought it was good, and I was glad that the only naked person we saw was a dead guy. But I also... thought that some of the conversations were like scribbling on a chalkboard, like Doc Brown, like, here is everything you need to know. And, you know.
It's an episode one. They gotta do that.
It is absolutely true. I'm not saying it's invalid. I'm just saying it's
been 15 months.
I'll give it a 5. I thought,
yeah, you do.
Going all in. I don't care. Like, we do this shit every year. We're like, well, we got a super 5 for the really good episode. That's such bullshit. There's never a good episode down the line.
You calling me out?
Yes.
Thank you.
Wow. Just gonna
cash my chips right here at the front. I thought it was patient and took its time for character beats. And my complaint usually about the show is that there's no time to breathe and there's no good setup and payoff. And so the fact that there's only like 5 groups of characters now instead of 20 to look after has worked in the show's benefit, and so I really enjoyed every single scene and thought it felt like the actors actually had something to chew on other than just going through the motions of plot, so I really liked it.
Paul, what about you?
I gave it a 4.25, similar to Greg. Really liked it, loved the little I just loved a bunch of the little bits they threw in there. For one, seeing Old Town in the opening sequence was really cool, but also definitely have some nitpicks.
Yeah, and we will no doubt get to those. Dana?
I gave it 4.5. I really enjoyed it. There was just a few things that I didn't love, but most of it was fantastic.
So Matt, what do you think?
I'm giving it a 4.75. I agree it's nearly perfect with a couple nitpicks, like why are there Lannister banners hanging in King's Landing, but the Baratheon thing is still in the opening credits?
Here.
Yeah, there you go. But we'll get into those later, but I love that we're back here and talking to all you people.
All right, excellent. And I think honestly, I think I give it a 5. I was excited the whole time. I enjoyed the scenes. The pacing I thought was great. It was kind of everything I wanted. I mean, you know, out of a premiere, it told me where everyone's going, and nothing really sucked. So yeah, I was very happy with it.
The first scene is the twins, and we have Walder Frey throwing a banquet for all of his family members, except we know Walder Frey is dead, and it turns out to be Arya, and she's poisoned them all, and good times are had. What do you guys think?
Awesome.
Did anyone else think it was a flashback for a split second?
Yep. Okay. I totally did. Second,
yeah. But I liked it, but then I'm like, wow, is this fan fiction? And then I went, oh yeah, it's Game of Thrones, it's fan fiction.
Oh, we're shitting on them already. Come on, first Paul. Scene. Just enjoy it.
Oh, it was, I enjoyed the scene, but it was a guilty pleasure. Like,
yeah. What was her killing Walder Frey? That was a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, embrace, I mean, that, you just kind of have to, I mean, the show is yeah, taking those steps that we thought were going to be taken really quickly in the book and just going there. And, I mean, who needs Lady Stoneheart, right?
Right, yeah. We got Arya.
Yeah.
We're good.
Who's apparently a lot more efficient.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Why bother with this one at a time nonsense? Hell of a lot more efficient.
Is the Red Wedding referred to as the Red Wedding in the book?
Yes.
Yeah, I just couldn't remember.
I think Tyrion's like, they're referring to it as the Red Wedding. It, like, there's something in the book that, yeah, they're like, oh yeah, the people call it the Red Wedding.
The media's distorting it. It wasn't all that bad.
No.
Fake news.
Whole episode. No trouble.
The White Wedding. It's a perfect day for it. Nothing happened.
right.
We're done. Casey, that was a reference to an AIDS.
I understood the fucking reference.
Oh my god.
Now okay. I feel like we're back.
Casey's back with a vengeance.
By the way, that was a reference to how every 80s movie sequel was like back with a vengeance. Well, okay.
So, that was great. So, yeah. So, Arya kills all the Freys, and we no longer have to worry about Freys because justice is served. Moving on, and we get a new credit sequence, which features some new stuff. That's great.
Old Town, and motherfucker. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like Globe Inception, because the intro goes kind of at the top of the Old Tower, and then like there's that globe again in the Old Tower intro sequence. It's globe within a globe. It's all happening.
I have one thing about the opening sequence. Why are there Lannister banners all over King's Landing, but the opening sequence still has a Baratheon stag?
Hey, the political situation is
stag,
really,
it still
come
has
on.
All the roses around the Baratheon of the Tyrells.
You know, it costs a lot to redo these opening sequences, people. I think we're definitely noticing things the average viewer does not.
I'm just glad there was no Essos. It was the first. I think it's the first time ever that there was nothing in Essos, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
That is interesting.
And no Dorne.
There's never been a Dorne, Kate. Anyway,
there has been a Dorne. There's a spiraling snake thingy.
No.
Adam was being like. You know.
Oh, you forgot that.
The city of Dorne, you mean?
Yeah.
Let's not go back to that, please. We get Bran, and he's seeing some stuff and showing up at the wall to meet with Lord Commander Dolorous Head, like, right away. I expected this to happen quickly. I did not expect it to be the first scene.
Wait, we had the White Walkers first before this, right?
Right, but that's all part of his vision.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah. He's seeing that, and then we cut to him. It's all kind of one scene there.
I was all angry, like, we're going to get ice spiders, like, and then we don't. But we got ice giants, so I was very happy.
Yeah, ice giants for sure.
But it was Ice Wanwan because he had the one eye shot out and the one blue eye.
It's the giants of the siege.
On the other side of the wall.
I'm sure they burned Wanwan.
Yeah, it's the giant.
They're probably still burning
from the siege that they killed.
Long to get through his body.
Wait a minute. How was that the giant from the siege?
They killed like 8 giants in the battle of the wall, right?
Yeah, and like the last one that came up to break the wall when like they broke into Castle Black, I'm pretty sure it's the same guy.
Yeah. And he turned into a white, walked back to the army of the whites, and was like, hey guys, I was just like at the wall, but I decided to come back.
Yeah.
It could have just been other giants that they've died, you know.
Not all giants are connected, guys. Come on, let's not.
I guess Matt, you do bring up an interesting point. You would think they would have burned those bodies, but I guess not.
I thought that was a vision of the future because there's a lot of armored guys with spears. And Wan that looked like he had one blue eye and Ramsay shot out the other one. So I thought it was a vision of the future, like they had gone beyond the wall, like the dead from the Battle of the Bastards.
Oh.
Wait a minute. Was that a... You thought that was a... I didn't think that was a vision. I thought he was just seeing what was going on.
I thought he was seeing what was going on, and especially with him not being connected to a weirwood, I was like, whatever. But, you know, you could very well be right. It wasn't explicit. And we get a little bit of that later on, too, which is like, is that happening right now, or is that a vision of the future with the fire vision?
Well, don't we get, like, doesn't Bran's vision come from, like, we get a shot of, like, birds or ravens or something going overhead?
Oh, yeah, the crowbine from Dunlin.
Talking about the trailers, but...
Right.
It starts as an aerial shot, so I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I didn't take note for sure on that, but... Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. And so, we see Bran, who has kind of become the three-eyed raven very quickly.
Just in case you didn't know that, he said it. I'm the three-eyed raven now.
Yeah, he went for... I mean, when we left him last season, wasn't he still a bit... I don't know, like still kind of in like junior mode on all this. And now he's like, hey, I saw you do all these things. I'm badass. Let me through the wall. He's very confident.
In the last episode of last season, like they come to a weirwood and Mira's like, are you sure?
Right.
I don't know why what's his face left him so far away from the wall that they look like fucking blue already. But yeah, that was...
I'll tell you why. Because Mira Reed cannot catch a damn break. That's why.
Aww.
There were several points in this episode where, like, they should have left those people closer to where they were going. But we'll get to that.
All right.
And it looks like Bran going through the wall has no impact on anything, even though him going through the wall breaks the three-eyed raven's little holdfast, like the magic around that. It looks like it has no effect whatsoever.
No, we don't know that because nothing happened in Blood Raven Sanctuary other than Blood Raven was like, holy shit, they can get in now. Like, there wasn't any big moment where, like, the wall started shaking or anything. So him walking across the wall could just mean now they're allowed to come back. And we don't know, and it's even more scary.
Blood Raven, like, told him off kind of immediately, and this show always does foreshadowing, and there was no, like, little crumple or sound or any indication.
To your point about the foreshadowing, Jim Broadbent in the Citadel is like, after everything, the walls always stood. Like, everyone thought it would be the last winter, but then summer came. But the wall always stood. So I think that's...
Yeah, and we get a lot of talk about Eastwatch and the Army of the Dead at Eastwatch and yada, yada, yada. So.
And correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the wall built after the Long Night?
Yep.
So he's wrong about that, unless that's just show canon wrong. Not like
if they say it in the show, I assume that's what happened in the history on the show.
Well, is that them being intentionally wrong, or like him? He's talking about how we're the guardians of history, and he's got his history wrong.
No, that's the canon of the show.
Okay,
not so book canon.
All right.
Also,
yeah, especially the old history is very, very different on the show.
Yeah. And going quickly back to just like the shot of the whites just coming in on that big cloud. Was anyone scared there'd be a white Hodor around there somewhere?
Well, no, because I thought it would be like a past version. I didn't realize, like, until my wife was like, isn't that Wan? I'm like, no, that's... Oh, fuck.
Yeah, you know, that is a way to get Christian Narn back on the show, Zombie Hodor. Calling it now, episode 4, anyway.
Zodor?
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, I'm cutting that out. So let's move on to the next scene, which I thought was especially interesting. We get John talking about how we go to Mon Dragonglass, whatever, don't care. And they need to man the wall. Also, woman the wall. All the women need to fight as well. And we get kind of a nice scene where him and Sansa are at odds. I guess they sort of set this up last season, but I don't think I didn't feel they set it up very well. And so now, you know, she wants to give the castles away, and she's arguing about castles, and he's like, are you serious? We just need people to survive. Like, anyone that's willing to man those castles right now, because they're the front lines against an army of the undead, is probably good. Like, we don't need to piss people off.
Let's pick the young boy child and the young girl child.
Yeah, hey, let's pick...
They'll
let's
do a good job.
Mormont let's has pick these fucking children. Rocked it so far, so, you know, they're like, maybe this is a thing.
Did anyone else think that we're gonna he was going to marry them?
Yep, I thought that did. As well.
And I was going to wonder what the point would have been, but... I guess because they still have men, and you're keeping men from those houses instead of them running south, right?
Well, I love that Lyanna, first of all, put fucking... God damn it.
What's Darling? Percy?
Mormont?
No, not Mormont. The fucking Gober Glover. Like, in his place, he's like, do you want me to put a spear in my granddaughter's hands? And she's like, do you think I'm going to be fucking knitting as the dead comes? I'm going to be fucking fighting, motherfucker. And then, like, she gives, like, eyes to, like, the little umber dude that, like, swears allegiance. That's awesome. I mean, she's just great.
For sure. It's a great character. Katie, you were trying to say something?
No, I thought they were going to get married, too, just because that's Alice Karstark. And she's she's the girl who marries the wildling and Dance with Dragons.
Yeah.
So she should have married Tormund.
The Fen, right?
That would have been great.
Tormund's got other plans.
I think Sansa had a great point, because everyone in the room's kind of pissed off and these people didn't stand by them and all that. But, you know, Jon had a good point, too. And it's just, it sucks to see them arguing and, like, they're at the point where they're arguing in front of the entire room of nobles. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, what the fuck?
They were both right, but they shouldn't do that in front of. That's even said afterwards. Like, you can tell me anything you want behind, but don't. You got to have a united front.
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't know if the show is going to go this deep of a level, but I wouldn't be surprised if Sansa, on some level, was kind of trying to undermine Jon, just because. I mean, she's been through so much at the hands of so many men who never listened to her, and like, she's finally home. I wouldn't blame her for being like, well, you know what? Like, you're not the only powerful person in this room.
Yeah, and she had that whole line that was like, I learned a lot from Cersei.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
That was
it's
weird.
It's like, oh, okay.
Like, I don't remember her learning anything from Cersei.
Yeah, or even being in the room with her that much.
Cruelty and drinking wine equals becoming a queen.
Yeah. I like the scene just because frequently what characters argue about in the show doesn't make any sense to me. Like the conflicts that arise between characters feel like they could be solved very easily, but here someone I forget who's like, nobody's wrong in this situation. John's thinking about keeping as many men, well, not he's thinking like in terms of numbers, but Sansa's thinking about in terms of morale, which are they're both important. It's just two different approaches to the same problem. And so I thought it was just, it's a good scene because it's like everyone's motivations actually are clear and make sense, and it makes for good tension.
Yeah, and clearly John didn't tell her that he was going to pull this little stunt and have them come up and all that, and because that kind of gets the rest of the people, you know, back on their side a little. So,
but to me, like the scene, well, like Kay was saying, like, you know, each argument, like people are like thumping the tables and everything, and so it made sense. But at the same time, it's like, what loyal houses were you going to give their castles to?
Yeah, all the houses that decided not to come to your aid.
Right. Like, Gober Glover's like, we supported Starks for 1,000 years and we'll do it again to like name Rob King of the North, and it's like, or John King of the North. And it's like, except for the last year where you didn't help him out with the battle that he just won.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the Battle of the Bastards, I think there's a big scene when they all say like, "Oh, we fucked up. Like, we're sorry. We were scared. We didn't come to your aid. We should have, etc." So, I mean, is that as bad as coming to Ramsay and saying, "Hey, I'm on Team Ramsay"? You know, no, but it's not great either.
It's interesting because I feel like this is a microcosm of what Jon goes through at a Dance with Dragons. In the show, I don't think, like, I feel like the situation of who gets the castles is resolved in this scene. But in the book, like, Jon's whole folly is that he's so set on like focusing on numbers and getting a united front, but that he doesn't really pay attention to the emotional turmoil that's going on in his camp. Like it doesn't, like it's not as important as making sure everyone stays alive, but at the same time, that's what makes his front eventually crumble. He doesn't attend to the emotional needs of his men. But no, I don't think that this decision is going to come back to haunt him, just because I don't think the show puts enough emphasis on it. It just seems like it's a minor problem that sets up the John Sansa Fisher, and that's what's going to be important.
Because they're moving so quickly as well.
I think the good thing that the show has done so far is just reminded everyone, like, I've seen the Night's King, and like you've seen the Night's King, like the next scene with Bran is like, you've seen the Night's King at Hardhome. You know what you're seeing. You were at the Fist of the First Men. You know what you're seeing. Like John's saying, like John's communicating that more than ever happened in the books, where it's like, okay, so we don't have to get behind me necessarily. We have to get behind this idea of the fucking others are out there and we have to kill them.
What does Sansa say before they're interrupted? She says something like, I couldn't hear it, like she was whispering to him, like at the very end of their conversation when they're up on the wall, is like, would that be so much or bad or something?
Oh yeah, she asked him something about, like, you know, you got to learn, you like don't, like I wrote it down, she said, look, you don't be stupid, like you got to be smarter than Rob and smarter than Dad was, like, you know, you need to learn to listen to people. And he was like, well, you mean listen to you. And she's like, well, would that be so bad? And I think she makes a good point, because, like, Team Stark, but...
She also does this thing where, like, she... And I can never tell how much of the show, especially with Sansa at this point, she's kind of hard to read. But, like, you know, she kind of really gives Jon's ego, like, a good massage, you know, in that scene. And it's interesting because, like, obviously she was just like, dude, you're entirely wrong in this case, and I don't agree with you. So, I don't know. I'm kind of confused and a little nervous about where this is going, to be honest.
I hope it doesn't end up with Sansa stabbing Jon and saying, for the Starks.
Yeah.
I'm the Queen of Winterfell. No.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I hope it doesn't go that way. I hope it ends with her telling Littlefinger off and slicing him up or something. I don't know. I don't like seeing them fight. Like, we saw them come back together, and that was such a great moment, right? We finally got a Stark reunion, and they very quickly made it, like, Starks be arguing. So, I don't know.
But Bran's, like, at Castle Black now, so he's got the Jon is a Targ knowledge.
He's got to get back to tell them so that he can make the alliance with Danny.
And also, Sam just found the
Sam sent a
dragon stone with the dragon stone.
Okay, yeah. And so, did we see, by the way, that aerial shot after, like, in the transition to when John and Sansa are talking? Was that the Wintertown, or was that just like the army camp there?
I thought so.
I thought it was army camp.
It was hard to tell for sure. No, I thought I saw some tents, but I thought I saw some buildings too, so it went so quick. Anyway, let's see.
Couldn't have meant Littlefinger, could she? When she was like, we need to give castles to people who helped us out.
It wouldn't have been a bad idea,
she tells him off later, she doesn't want him to have more power.
No, but that would have been no power. It would have been like, here's a token of my appreciation, but it doesn't actually mean anything.
Like, here's Last Hearth, the front line against the Army of the Undead. You're welcome.
Enjoy.
Again, that's one of the best reasons, I think, for what Jon did, was to double down with the people who, it's their home, or they're going to fight and, you know, die over it if it comes to that. Whereas you pull someone up who's like maybe the son of another lord or something, and they're going to run pretty quickly when that army comes. So.
I love the fact that those two kids were in that room at that time. And they're just like, we're going to give your castle away to more loyal people. And they're like, we were just learning our numbers. Like,
that girl's like 14. Well,
there's no such thing as childhood in the Middle Ages, Matt. You know that.
He clearly set that up, and no one knew who they were because they were kids, and they were all shocked by it, and here, and everything.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, you go ahead, Casey, and then we're going to move on.
Okay. I was just going to say it was a good tool to, like, get people on John's side, because up until that point, I think I was pretty like, yes, Sansa, side with Sansa. And then he pulled up the two kids, and I was like, oh, no, the two children.
And they're kneeling.
Yeah, and they're really sweet, and, you know, so it was a good method to get everybody on his side, even the show watchers, possibly.
But what? Do you think John came up with that, or was it someone else?
It was Dan and Dave.
Oh, perfect. Actually, it wasn't the writer of this Brian Cogman, or was this Dan and Dave?
Dan and Dave.
I thought they wrote the first two episodes, right?
Yeah, it was Dan and Dave at the beginning.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's leave the North behind for a minute, and we're going to move on to that fabulous map room that we saw in the trailer that Cersei had commissioned because she likes giant maps of Westeros.
All the tax money in King's Landing.
She can't leave the keep right now, I really don't think. Like, it's still a tenuous situation. People are afraid of her. She's got her army, but she's probably not going outdoors too much. So everyone needs hobbies, and hers are map rooms.
Well, she read the books, and now she's like, give me that on my floor. Make that on my floor.
Yeah. So just a few things. We get the map room, talking about the enemies from all directions. We get whenever they show fleets, I don't know why there's always like a million ships, but we get like a million ships from the Iron Islands.
It's a thousand ships.
You know what? Screw you. So we get a giant Greyjoy ship, which is Euron's flagship. And we get the Queensguard, I guess, who they had a time for a wardrobe change, huh? It's like hybrid Lannister uniforms, but they're black. They've gone like full, you know, like dark Cersei looking. Yeah, and then we get a marriage proposal.
Yeah.
This guy... I laughed when he is dressed like he's in Coldplay. His wardrobe.
Yikes.
I just wrote down haircut and lost accent. That's all I had.
I just thought looked better.
It just doesn't make any sense. And everyone else is wearing armor, like long woolen gowns and clothes. And he's wearing if he came to propose, he didn't put on his best presentation.
Well, no, I mean, that's what his point was. It's like, hey, take me as I am right now, but guess what? I'm going to get you the most, you know, precious gift there can be. Like
my two hands.
Yeah. My three legs.
That was the only line that I actually...
Also, Cersei called Tommen a traitor.
That's not...
Yeah, she said Tommen betrayed me when JB tried to pull her out. Like, we haven't talked about Tommen. And she was like, nah.
Yeah. That's how she's rationalized.
That is crazy.
No, that's understandable.
If we can go back to last season for a minute, I didn't like the Tommen story arc. I just didn't like his, like, off-screen crazy conversion, even though Margaery clearly wasn't. You know, she was playing a game. And it was all very weird. And maybe the actor wasn't good enough to pull it off. I don't know. But I just didn't buy it. And then when he jumped out the window, I laughed. Like,
well, it was kind of
I
loved
that.
It was kind of like watching the thing blow up and being like, bye, Felicia.
Yeah, and I mean, it's clearly because last season he was making decisions with, I mean, I guess we were supposed to believe maybe Kevin was down with that. I don't know.
Well,
a lot of things by himself that we never saw. We never really got the motivation of. So
yeah, what's his name? Pycelle said, "No, not Pycelle. God damn it, Qyburn says Pycelle asked for her uncle to come and, you know, take control of everything. She's like, okay, that's not good.
Yeah.
Wait, you didn't understand why she said Tommen betrayed me?
No, I understood that for sure. I just didn't like his storyline last season.
Oh, okay.
Like, he definitely did not side with his mother last season, and I mean, he put her out in the gallery while he announced that she couldn't use her undead monster to win her freedom. So that was definitely probably the moment, I would think, where she definitely turned. But I think it's more rationalizing in her head. Like, she didn't want him dead. Like, she obviously wanted to take the brainwashing off of him, right?
He committed suicide. And I mean, that makes sense in her emotional reality, is that, you know, it's an aggressive act to her that he did it and it hurt her. And so for her, that's a betrayal of love. And like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people would feel the same in that situation. I felt bad for her.
No.
I mean, I don't feel bad for her, but I think it makes sense considering the emotional state that she's coming from and the fact that, like, I mean, the reason I thought Tommen's suicide was so actually perfectly executed last season was because it was this culmination of this story where Cersei kept trying to exert control over Tommen, and Tommen was like, hi, I'm my own person. I choose to be a slave to the faith. And then, like, the fact that, like, he had, I mean, it's her fault. I mean, well, I don't have to talk about it for a long time. It's her fault that he committed suicide because she murdered his wife, spiritual mentor, uncle, probably all his friends, you know.
Yeah, everyone. And
yeah.
She practically pushed him out that window.
Yeah.
And didn't have anyone to restrain him. Or, like, there was a guard with him in the room, I believe. Or he might have walked out of the room right before, but, like, clearly they did nothing.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting just to see how Cersei is able to keep her power when everyone's like, well, you blew up half the fucking city.
Oh, I don't think anyone is... I don't think anybody is going to call her on that.
Really? Oh, Jaime did. She referred to herself as Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, and he's like three kingdoms at best.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's Jaime.
Did anybody else feel like Jaime was like all of us in this episode? He's like, what the fuck are you thinking? What the fuck are you doing? What is this?
He was the audience for a moment there, yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the...
kidding me?
I like how she was like, you've been silent since you've come back. And he's like, are you kidding?
Silent. Why do you think?
We need to process this.
I just love him.
Just hiding in a closet somewhere.
I just loved his, the Greyjoys ain't shit talk with her. They're just spiteful little men. I'm like, yes, thank you.
That was great. Like, the Greyjoys aren't good at anything.
Euron came into the throne room. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember you killing all my family. You know, that was great.
I was kind of hoping that he would have been like, you know, what's the deal with the Greyjoys? The crown is driftwood, for Pete's sake. You know.
It's not Larry David, so.
And now to King's Landing. Boom.
Yeah, so is there anything else you guys want to talk about this scene?
Sorry.
So I just wanted to say, like, with the whole rug painting of Westeros, I felt like that was funny, like, that he just came here, he's like, what is this, Jaime? And then Cersei's like, it's what we've all been waiting for. And I was like, yes, it's what I've been waiting for this whole fucking season.
Like, Dad trained us to paint maps. Okay. Sure.
But it everywhere was definitely my like skirt for touches, the... Jaime, is our domain.
I kind of like that there's... It's so focused now that there's nobody left in this goddamn city except the two of them. Like, it is just Jaime and Cersei show all the time now in King's Landing. Like, Tyrell's gone. I guess Qyburn's still hanging around somewhere, but otherwise, like, it's just them. And I love it. I love how fucked up it is that it's just like this incestuous brother and sister looking out at the city like, oh, okay, like, what are we going to do?
All we have to do is take it, brother. Like, are you kidding me? There's like five armies around us.
It's so focused. I love it.
Yeah, it is great.
I'm assuming, based on what we know from the books and future books and blah, 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 that... what we have of the stuff that's been written, we can discuss that in a different podcast. But, I mean, like, they had Joffrey. They introduced Ramsay, and then they killed Joffrey. They had Ramsay, they introduced Euron, and then they killed Ramsay. And right. I'm looking at Euron, and I'm going, you're no Ramsay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Euron's going to be the big bad.
Until I see a Valyrian steel...
not in that costume, he's not.
...armor suit for him, I'm like, whatever. You're no Tony Stark. Anyway, so let's see. Let's move on. And what was the next scene that we come across? That is what I've been waiting for pretty much the whole off season was the Citadel. And I'm glad we actually got a little time here, except we go straight to shelving books and cleaning up bedpans.
And vomit.
Single-handedly the funniest scene in Game of Thrones yet, because I have never actually laughed, like, cackled. Like, I was laughing out loud for 30 seconds straight because this was hilarious.
It's just awful.
I just want gagging Sam to be my new text message alert.
You know,
just I think everyone says, around you throw up.
That says a lot about you, Paul, and we're not going to comment on that. So yeah, it's cool. We get some Citadel action, and then we get Archmaester Slughorn, who's kind of doing an autopsy, I guess. But yeah,
I hope so. Otherwise, he's fucked up.
Well, I mean, it might not be an autopsy. It might just be
this,
playing around with
this.
Dead bodies.
Okay,
you know
clean
what I mean?
This up.
But yeah, so he basically, and I guess it's not really, like I said, I mentioned before the show, it's not really Slughorn as much as it is Professor Diggory from Chronicles of Narnia, where he's like, I believe you, Sam, but not really, you know, like, I'm not going to give you access to the books that you want, poor Sam. He does make one good line, I thought, that stood out. He said, you know, everyone in the Citadel doubts everything. That's their job. So, you know, he realizes that some of this stuff is probably real, but, you know, we can't believe it until we're dead, so.
We're scientists, man.
They doubt everything except whether or not women and children should be allowed to be educated. That one thing they're certain about.
We've done the research. Yep. This chain right here.
Yeah.
What would that chain be made out of?
And indoor plumbing, they doubt that as well.
It was kind of interesting how they were like, yeah, the cycle continues, and it's going to keep on continuing. But we all kind of know that that's not going to be the case, I think.
Yeah, so, and I guess they're like, hey, we're
relatable.
So far south, it's never affected us that much. So we've always been good. Like, what happens if someone comes and destroys all their pretty books? I think they'd have a different song to sing.
I don't know. I felt like this was almost the first hopeful hint at the future. I mean, he's right and he's wrong at the same time. He's wrong in that the wall will not last forever and the armies of the dead will come down south. I think that's not really up for debate. But I also think he's not wrong that things will continue. They'll just be in a really fucked up form for a while. But it's not as if, I don't know, I don't think we're looking at a mass extinction event for the rest of Westerosi history. I feel like,
well, for a second there, I wasn't sure if you were talking about reality or this show.
I know. I'm trying not to be like, it's going to suck, but it's not going to be the end, is the takeaway I got from what he was saying.
Wasn't someone singing an Annie song?
That's going to be our next 50 years.
I'd hope it's not the end, but I mean, realistically, if they're not stopped, the army goes, what, all the way down through Dorne and then just kind of starts, they're like lemmings, they just start walking around Westeros forever because they can't get off the island.
Yeah, and then the Summer Island, Summer Islanders conquer Westeros and there's a new Summer Island, you know, empire. So history is always, you know, someone will come back and repopulate the lands of the dead.
What weight of measurement do you think they use?
I was wondering that too.
You know they had a meeting about this and David and Dan were just like, just don't give him anything, just give him a number. Just let him think.
What do they use for writing it down and everything?
Parsecs. Let's go with parsecs. Parsecs sound.
It's sound.
The unit of time, you dumbass.
I was making. I was. That was a joke.
I know.
Okay.
Don't they use stone in the book? Did they ever use measurements in the book? Stone. This man wastes.
They use measurements, and usually when George does, and people try to do some math on it, it's horrible. So I just try to pay attention to it.
Robert gained 20 stones, so he gained like 450 fucking pounds or something.
It's like the economy in Westeros. You're just like, whatever. Tell me if they're broke or not. Like, it's all I need to know.
I wish Dina hadn't said that because that's all I can think about now when someone wins a tourney and they've got 100,000 gold coins.
$6 million in their pocket.
That they have nowhere to take and nothing to do with. It's just a wagon full of gold.
They can barely hold it.
No wonder that guy blew it all right after he won it. It's not like there's a bank he can put it.
He's like, if I don't, I'm going to get robbed and killed on the way home. So
Oh, George.
Okay, so we go on. Let's see. The next scene was... Oh, yeah, we get Brienne and Pod in the practice yard at Winterfell, which is pretty cool. And then we get Littlefinger trying to creep, like a major motherfucking creeper.
We get two creepers. We get Tormund creeping up on Brienne, and I'm really glad we didn't hear what gross things he said to her.
Whoa, are we calling Tormund a creeper?
He's a gross creeper.
Oh.
I don't think so.
I ship it.
Obviously had consensual sex with not only a giant, but also a bear. And he's looking to get a little Brienne love.
I don't want it.
Me neither.
I don't think Brienne wants it either.
Tormund at least wants to get beaten up by Brienne. Yeah. He's jealous of Pod. Any hands on him is good hands, I think, when it comes to Brienne.
There you go.
I am so about this ship.
No.
Casey.
Only in the show.
Yeah, of course.
Only in the show.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like book Jamie or show Jamie. So, like,
that's called Jamie. That's Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie gets back to King's Landing and just is like, "I'm all about Cersei." Like, oh, fuck off. But
is that new thing that helps clean up spills? The Jamie.
Guys, no, that's
the shame.
It's made by the Germans, so you know it's great. Anyway,
guys, for the next 30 seconds, you can get two Shamies for the price of one, and the spray Shamie included. Order now.
We don't do this every day, Matt. So let's get this back on track for a second here. Oh,
who's
Lord
hosting this fucking nut house?
Not me. I'm like three cups in. So,
sorry guys, it's me, Zach. I'm still recording.
Oh my god, you can't do that.
Well, apparently he can only say one sentence in Zach's voice.
So I do think I do want to point out that Sansa has a great little moment where she kind of like backhands Littlefinger at the end, and he's like, no. Where she says, "What does she say?" She says, "Yeah. No need to get into the last word. I'll just assume it was something witty." And he's like, "Oh, fuck." Yeah.
Like, yes.
Damn it, it was.
I wrote that down. It's like one of my favorite lines. She was just like, "I want some peace and quiet, Glenn."
Yeah. I was like, Sansa,
do you think Littlefinger just like went down to like a maid or some kind of servant and just said what he wanted to? Just be like, thanks.
Yeah. I feel like he's just like wandering around the Weirwoods, like being like,
what is he
was
doing?
Clever, says.
I mean, can we talk about like show Littlefinger is such a different character than I assume book Littlefinger is going to be, because he quickly went from this master plotter to like, oh my gosh, was Ramsay terrible? Oops! Like he just like he, I really want you, Sansa, but I'm going to marry you off to this like horrific person, which makes zero sense. Gets him nothing.
It was also like, why aren't you happy? Oh. You just had a conversation about this last season.
The only thing that disconcerted me about this scene is when Brienne got up close to the camera. She's got some weird Ronald McDonald hair going on that I wish they would change this season.
What? Now I'm just picturing Ronald McDonald in Brienne's armor.
No. Oh, wait. So, oh, man. Oh gosh, Ronald McDonald. Okay.
Make Arya the Hamburglar.
He's waiting for a Hamburglar.
Is Cersei
black and white?
No, Beric Dondarrion's the Hamburglar because the Hamburglar has those like little things across his eyes.
Why don't they execute the Hamburglar in the McDonald's lore?
Because it's a children's
wow.
It's
for just a fucking fast food children's
minor
thing.
Minor offense should be executed.
The 2017 Summer Event at McDonald's, the hanging of the Hamburglar. Hang him high. Your burgers will never be stolen. Oh my gosh. Oh, this is all going to have to get cut. So, So I thought that was a pretty great scene for Sansa, and I'm hoping we get more of her kind of being a solid Stark and less of her arguing with Jon, and hopefully they can all get along and fight the undead together.
Mm-hmm, so. That's going to happen.
I also like
Hey,
how...
don't dash my hopes.
Sorry.
Yeah, what were you saying, Casey?
I just, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to say that I liked how Brienne and Sansa's relationship is still a thing.
It exists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They are noting that.
When did? When did it not exist?
Did we see Davos?
Oh, yeah. We saw Davos 3 times make Davos eyebrows, but he didn't say anything.
During the scene with John, yeah, he kind of like is like, good point. Oh, good point as well, you know.
And they like showed the whole like, oh, you know, okay, this girl reminds me of Shireen a little bit, so he's like fatherly with her. I think it was a little.
Oh, right.
They went from him to that.
That's what I was gonna say. He did his little like half smile of Shireen to like, and it was heartwarming and lovely. And she might die now because she.
No. I mean, they all might die. But
I don't
not cause of
want
that.
It. To happen, but you know, Davos likes her, and you know, he doesn't have a great run.
Oh, for one, you know, it's 0-1, so like, let's let him get.
Which is 100%.
I would say 100%, it's 0 for, like it's 0 for a bit more than one. Where are all of his sons? Anyway, yeah,
fine.
So we finally get back to Arya. Let's move on here. She's trotting along on horse. I thought she was going north at first. I wrote down, I'm like, is she going north? And very quickly, Ed Sheeran proved me wrong. She is going south.
Way too much Ed Sheeran.
He sings us a little tune.
And, cameo my ass. Welcome to the Ed Sheeran show.
Well, I thought that probably the best part of this scene was you see Arya sitting down, clearly taking everything in, surveying their weapons, kind of figuring out like how easy it would be to kill them. And then she kind of realizes that they're being nice and they offer her food. And so she takes their food and decides to become a guest and not kill them, thus saving all of their lives.
She does kill Ed Sheeran that night, though.
I think she just, like, realizes how human they are. And just, like, you know, when the one guy is like, I hope my kid's a girl because, like, take care of you when you're old and... doesn't go out to fight for fucking someone else. And I think every time someone says something, it's like, it just humanizes them a little bit. And so it's like, for her, not all Lannisters are bad, or Lannister army men, or, you know.
Yeah. And then I think they poured it on a little bit thick. With
soldiers
with
have
that.
Two sides. Ooh.
Yeah, like after she, like once she kind of decides, I'll eat your rat or whatever that was, and
it was actually really unclear.
I believe it was a brace of conies.
All right.
Do they have any tape?
Okay, Sam.
Yeah, so once she decides to eat that, it's kind of like that was enough, and they kept piling on. You're like, okay, we get it.
Yeah,
she's not going to murder them already. Like,
I hope this isn't doesn't get reversed in the next few episodes where she ends up killing all of them or they try to rape her or something.
Is the nice guy's going to try to kiss her because like he's in love with her and she's going to kill all of them.
Well, yeah, I mean,
as soon as she was like, "Are you old enough to drink?" I was like, "Please no, we don't need please no."
Rapey.
Is there a drinking age in Westeros?
That's what Westeros is.
It's actually kind of weird because Arya basically stumbled across like the only 21st century soldiers in Westeros. I'm like, oh, hello, young lady. We will be perfectly respectful with you. And like, are you old enough to drink, dear? And like, laugh at your jokes. And it was just like, I don't think we've met ever.
For a second, when they were like, "Are you old enough to drink?" I was like, "They're Freys. They're gonna skin her. Like, something's wrong here." But it thankfully was just kind of the scene was a little awkward. That was it.
But I actually like excruciating almost because I was like, something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
So
I
like,
think that's intentional. Yeah. I mean, Arya's face is that she's laughing with them, but also there's a bit of sadness. Like, oh yeah, this is how normal people act. I have no way to relate to this anymore.
Yeah, but it's not how normal people act on Game of Thrones.
I don't think it was sadness, though. I think it was like, oh, these are regular people that are just fighting for Lannisters. So,
I think it...
Like, and that's why I had, like, the trepidation, too. Like, I'm like, everyone's being really cool to her, until they're about to like rape her, and then that's when she'll go into killing mode or like something like that. But it was like, it's very.
I think it was just a. I think that the scene was the representation of what Arya could have had, both in like just being a normal person, being a potential soldier, and then even potentially being a normal daughter to her father. And I actually kind of liked it, other than the Ed Sheeran-ness. I think it's like told what could have been. I think I might feel differently if, you know, if it ends up being very Game of Thrones and somebody rapes somebody or God knows what the fuck will happen. But as of right now, I actually liked it, and like the like kind-heartedness of it, and just like a bunch of guys being around and being like, oh, we're going to be nice to you for once.
Yeah, I mean, this does feel like, I guess, kind of like if our alternate world, if she had been left at home instead of going to King's Landing, and like maybe she like snuck along with the army to go down with Rob or something, like maybe sort of this kind of interaction would have happened.
I feel like this is probably the most well-made scene in the episode, just because it had such good tension about Arya eating. You see what she's doing, like looking at the weapons and all that kind of thing. She denies their food the first time because she's still not sure what she's going to do. And then it had really good tension. Just you didn't know what she was going to do or what they were going to do. And yeah, besides Ed Sheeran, favorite scene. But Ed Sheeran, so it isn't.
But basically, the show writers did this for Arya, Maisie Williams, if I'm not mistaken. Like, she wanted him on the show. I think that was, like, why, or at least why said. Yeah. Huh.
Either that or. So that if it sucks, they can blame it on Maisie. Perfect. It sounds like them. You know, when George told us about Ed Sheeran. Fuck you guys. Like, come on.
That was a good one.
Anyway, I think that's the perfect time to actually start moving north. And we get Beric and the Hound and Company, and they stop. They stop at the Hound's Fried Chicken, which is full of snow. And I don't think that was that far north, right? That was still in the Riverlands when that happened, kind of towards the end of the Riverlands. But yeah, the Hound does not want to go in because he remembers what happened there and it reminds him of shit. And then he does go in and, you know, decides to bury the people, and he gets a fire vision, which is ironic for someone so afraid of fire. What did we think?
Those people look like they'd been dead for 50 years. No, not 5 months. They were mummified.
Have they been dead for 5 months?
They were dead for 4 seasons, Katie.
They've been dead since season 4. So, like, end of season 4.
I thought this was the best sequence in the episode, personally. Maybe that's a weird thing to say, but I thought it was very, very well done, and we saw a genuine character change, and we rarely see that.
Yes.
And that's not a criticism that we rarely see that, but I mean, it's, you know, it's a long-running television show. People kind of just sort of go along the same scale, and this is, we've seen, like, I don't know. We've never seen the Hound do anything like this, and we've never seen, right. I don't think, a character change in this way.
I think, like, Rory McCann's portrayal of the Hound has really been on point, especially even, like, last season and then with this. Like, they haven't given him so much as far as, like, a range up until recently, but I think he does a great job. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I liked that it was, you know, that it was kind of that interesting boundary between, like, even Dondarrion doesn't have any answers, you know. He just kind of is trusting in this, like, the messages that they keep seeing in the flames, and it's like, well, that's enough, I guess.
I like the banter between Thoros and Sandor. All right, okay,
yes,
there we go.
The top knot bit. Like, yeah, he's like, I know you're bald, just hiding it. that was great. I wrote that down as well. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I wrote. Is like, are they best friends now? Casey, did you have something?
Yeah, sure. So we got our gravedigger scene, the gravedigger thing. I thought it was, I was like, I kind of rolled my eyes at first, but then I was like, oh, this is kind of heartwarming a little bit. And it kind of like shows how, even though he was with a religious group for a while, he like still is just like, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
Until he looks in the flames, and then that seems to... I mean, it's interesting that he like goes right to do... Like, he... I don't know. I was very moved by the fact that he like cared enough that that was what it, like that inspired him to bury them and like to confront that in himself, that in some way this was his fault. And like, he even goes so far as like, you know, I mean, 5 minutes ago, Sandor Clegane, even if he had buried them because somebody else insisted, would have like spat on the graves and been like, good riddance. You know, I mean, like, he's trying to pray. It's, you know, to the, to a different God, but still.
Do you think he only buried them because of his vision, or if he didn't have the vision, he still would have buried them?
No, I think it's because of the vision. I think he, you know, they have that whole conversation, like, what happened to them? Like, oh, it was even worse than you imagined. Like, he killed the daughter and then killed himself, and blah, blah, blah. And then it, you know, and it's just, they both say, like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore. But clearly something comes back that it does matter. And he, I mean, he can't let it go. He's like, that girl would be alive instead of you. Like, you know, you shouldn't be dead. I don't know. I found it really like a tremendous alchemy that happened in him. And I really, I also thought that was a really good parallel that he spent all that time with, you know, Pastor McShane or whatever last season. And like, it made not a single dent, and he's arguing theology, and then this one thing happens, and you know.
Yeah.
I don't know if he manifested, but he's,
Do we think it was more effective that like they didn't spend any CGI and we just saw normal fire? Or do you think like maybe they should have showed us some shit?
No, I think it's fine.
Well, yeah, I think it's fine. I think
the reaction is in his eyes.
Maybe,
right?
He would have like, he still has his regular bravado when he's talking to people, but I still think he would have buried them even without the fire vision, because he does it something in secret and when everyone's asleep. So I think that's more personal growth because of Pastor McShane instead of seeing a vision in the flames.
Have we all forgotten Maribold? His name is Maribold, isn't it?
Who cares?
Okay,
he's been for like 5 seconds.
He's Mr. Wednesday, isn't he?
Oh, for fuck's sakes.
He's Pastor Wednesday.
Brother Wednesday. He didn't care about being on the show, so we don't really care what his name was.
I gotta get over to Stars. They're paying me for 9 episodes.
8.
I don't even know what this shit is, but I'm gonna act the hell out of it.
I mean, that's an interesting thought, Dana. It's possible, for sure. But I don't know. I feel like that happens in that sequence for a reason. And, you know.
I mean, that was my initial thought, maybe, was that that was just his plan. Was like, oh, like, once he saw the bodies, he was gonna bury them. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You both could be right.
But I mean, then he could have been like, hey, I don't want to spend the night with 2 corpses. Like, that's just very.
Yeah.
It.
Yeah.
I think regardless of him, like, believing in Azor Ahai and, you know, the Red God and all that, I think that he saw something in the flames that was bigger than him and what was going on, and bigger than him worrying about these 2 people that he killed. And he just, you know, repented his sins and move on to the big threat.
And judging from experiences with other people who've had religious experiences, he's not going to shut up about it for the next 4 episodes.
I mean, he's still the hound. Like, I kind of tend to think it'll, you know.
Guys.
Just like a
I
very small thing.
I make this chicken using fire.
Oh, my God. No, but just a very small thing I was thinking in terms of, like, why they didn't do, like, a CGI, you know, interpretation of the vision. I tend to think that, like, we are so spent already on this imagery of, like, the White Walkers and, you know, the Night King and all of this stuff. Like, I feel like they have to be careful about how often they use it. And, like, because after a while, it's going to be like, okay.
And it would probably be hard to make it look good anyway. So why spend the time when it's effective as is?
Yeah. And that's what they've done so far. I mean, like, there was that stupid scene at the end of season 2 or whatever, when Melisandre was like, Stannis, like, look into the flames, and he like got that like orgasm look on his face.
The flames.
Also,
yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I just kind of also like how they don't include the CGI, is because whenever in the show they've like talked about seeing stuff in the flames, they see it, but we, the audience, don't see anything. So it becomes more of like a personal revelation to them instead of just a, hey, everyone, look at this. Everyone can see it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's like the power of books, right, is that like we all have a different vision of characters and things in the books from what we read, and that's a pretty powerful image, so it's kind of nice to leave it up to us. All right, so let's move on, because we all know that Greg's been sitting over there angrily waiting for this. So we move back to Old Town when we see Gilly, and she's awesome, and that's all cool. And we learn that Dragonglass is made of dragon, or Dragonstone is made of dragonglass, I guess. And we see old Jorah, I guess, went to the Citadel for some help, probably, because there's a dude with grayscale that sounds a whole lot like old horsey Jorah. And yeah.
I just wanted to say, like, this library is amazing with, like, the lights reflecting, but they have an insane amount of chains hanging on their bookshelves, but none of the books seem to be chained. He's just stealing books and taking books. Did anyone else notice? Well, every single bookshelf had 10,000 chains.
I wrote it down as well. It's like, what? Why do they have like a chain section and an unchained section? Why is some books chained to the bookcase and others
maybe,
not?
Maybe
there's a hanging section. Like, why don't you have desks there so you can at least maybe put them down
the
and read them?
Maybe they chain the people there. When you're a maester, you're chained there for days at an end until you read all the books.
Well, like you said, there should have been a table to sit at. But
maybe like the chains like are connected, so when like the library is closed, they like pull them taut so you can't pull the books out. I don't know.
Hey Greg, what do you use the chains for in your bookstore?
Yeah, I was about to say.
How does it measure up, book owner?
When is the Ice and Fire Chained Edition coming out?
No, there's one on Etsy. I'm sure you can buy one on Etsy.
I don't want anyone stealing my book.
No one's trying to steal your book, Bob. Jeez. But no, it was pretty cool just to see all the chains. But I mean, just those kind of
like the chains.
Get hype for chains.
Chains gets me going.
Chain of Thrones.
Chain of Thrones.
And we're there.
Did anyone get a good look at the book when he is looking into the restricted section? Was that about like the movement of planets?
That's what I thought. Like, looks like an astrological, like it showed up.
Yeah, planets circling the sun. It kind of looked like something ramming into something else. Was this confirming moon, like moon dragons, and the fact that there was two moons before?
I think it really does confirm.
The recent Time article from George R. R. Martin did confirm moon dragons. That's all I'm going to say.
Also, you don't display a book open. One displays a book open. It's bad for the binding, especially these guys.
If you look very closely at the book, the title is White Raven Was Right.
The bindings, yes, Greg. Okay.
So what's with Jorah?
I thought it was in Maester Jail, and then I realized, oh, he's like a...
He's in quarantine?
Quarantine.
Yeah, so what is his plan? Because the Maesters obviously have never cured grayscale. He went there and was like, hey, do you have anything? And they're like, yes, in this room, and like locked him away.
And like, he's like, probably studying it.
And he's like, has the Dragon Queen come? I told them she would come. Like, okay. I don't know what
part of the wall.
This is an Attack on Titan. I don't know what he was doing there. Like, I don't know. I guess to him that was the most logical place to go, but clearly he's stuck.
I mean, I don't know how he got there that fast. But
yeah, is he replacing Aemon? Because you know how when Aemon dies, he tells Sam that it's Dany. Is Sam going to put it together between the Dragonglass and Jorah being there and tell Marvin? Marvin? God, no, Marvin. That's Marvin the Martian. Sorry. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think it's entirely plausible that he goes, wait a second, this guy was just talking about crazy Dragon Queen, and, you know, she's at Dragonstone, and he goes and is like, hey, I need to go to Dragonstone, and they have a conversation, and somehow Jorah knows things because reasons, I don't know.
This is all just going to end up in, like, episode 5, where Sam, John, Danny, everyone is on Dragonstone together. And then they have a little powwow. And
they can't wait till episode 5, son. There's only
three,
7 of them this
whatever.
Year.
No, that's three, next episode. Three.
Yeah, episode 4, like, the White Walkers are already in Dorne. Come on.
Dummies.
Yeah. So I guess it's really convenient that there are now dragons at Dragonstone. I guess. Yeah.
Is nobody defending Dragonstone? Just
They basically when Stannis left, he took pretty much everyone, I think.
The Lannisters know that that's where they're going to go. They should have at least put some tank traps in the water or something, you know.
D-Day it.
Yeah, D-Day it up.
They got to go get those old, get some Nazis those old in those anti-dragon potions.
Grey Worm, go.
But I thought this was actually a really great scene. Her arriving at Dragonstone, and it's Dany's story. We finally get to see her, crossing the ocean, and she's in Westeros, and she's home, and the music and the long trip up, and I thought it was great. Those dragons, I don't know, man. They know what to do all the time without anyone riding them. It's crazy.
She's trained them well. She read those Cressida Cowell books.
When did she train them?
So sorry, Greg, with the pull down of the Stannis banner.
It's okay. He's not my Stannis. But
Stannis literally left no one there. They're just
maybe a janitor.
They might have left. They might have been like,
There is no women, there's no children, and then there's no opportunistic pirates. Come on. Someone would find out Salador and just be like, San my castle now.
It's just sitting there. Ah, welcome.
Sat on that.
But level. I mean, for all we know, there were some people, and it looks like they sent a boat of Unsullied ahead, and because they opened the doors and stuff. So for all we know, there were a few people who were like, welcome, I'm the cook. I've just been here cooking the whole time.
My name's Cook. I'm the cook.
Yeah.
I cook for everybody.
We've learned that the blacksmiths and the cooks and all these people, they don't care what lords they are, as long as they're fed. So, that's entirely possible. But I think likely that whoever he left behind, if he left 20 men behind or some stupid thing to protect Dragonstone, they left long ago.
No, I just was thinking more that
he was defeated.
Stannis has been gone, he's dead, the Lannisters would have had someone there to bar her way or treat with her or something, I don't know, than just to leave it open, but...
Oh, they do, they have a great choice.
Yeah.
That'll be next episode.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, speaking of that, when Euron says, I'm gonna bring you the most precious thing in the world, he's talking about a dragon, right?
Oh, I thought he was talking about Tyrion's head.
Yeah,
first I was like,
I thought he meant himself.
Why not first?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had any foreshadowing of him with a dragon horn or anything on the show, right? I mean, he was like, I'm gonna go to Daenerys and give her the man love, and she's just gonna give me a dragon, and that was it.
Yeah, there's no horn in the show at all, right?
Do they even mention him going to Valyria or anything? I don't think that anything has come up. Not that it can't.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure the show has a few horny people.
File that.
Come on, it's good. No?
I can't join you on this one, man. I'm sorry.
In the books, we have, mysterious, but still pretty, at least if you're as psycho as we are, pretty clear rules for riding dragons. I don't think any of those exist in this. We haven't had a Quentin get burned to a crisp.
Right.
Tyrion was able to do it, and not ride them, but feed them. I kind of don't know if we need a dragon horn.
You think he can just kind of roll up and be like, oh, Viserion, good Viserion. Oh, he's mine now. He likes me. And
maybe
the end of it.
Or maybe it's maybe he kills one of the dragons. Yeah.
Oh, and he brings her a dragon head or something.
Yeah.
But then there would still be two others to. I don't know. I just feel however you slice it, Euron may win a naval battle or something. But Cersei's fucked, man. Those dragons can just fly up and burn the keep to the ground.
And how do they have soldiers?
How do you think Cersei's going to go out? Is she going to be killed by Jaime, or is she going to be eaten by a dragon?
Or Arya.
She's going to kill herself.
Yeah.
She's going to get eaten by Arya?
No! Fan fiction.
I'm not really out there.
No, Arya's gonna murder her.
That's too obvious.
Yeah, that's too obvious. We've already seen Arya killing too many satisfying people.
True.
So I guess if we're gonna put this, you know, this would be sort of like a going forward thing. But if we're gonna put this out there, like, what are the odds that Cersei survives the season?
Zero.
I mean, like, I don't like the idea of her being like the defeated Cersei who's like being held prisoner, especially by like Dany or someone who doesn't really know her at all. Like, I don't know, feel weird. But they also, I don't think they want to lose her on the show, and I worry they might try to keep her around for the final season.
So here's my theory. My general approach to this season is that we're going to be done with the Game of Thrones at the end of this season, and it's the Great War that will be season 8, you know, those 6 episodes. So anybody who is deeply rooted in the Game of Thrones is gone. And that includes both Jaime and Cersei.
She broke the wheel.
I have a feeling Jaime's going to somehow make it to the end of, like, the end and do something good to redeem everything. But I agree that...
I want to see him, but I don't know.
It would be a shamey if that didn't happen.
Shame.
I do think it would be kind of interesting to see, like, Jaime going and meeting up with Brienne and pledging his sword to the fight in the north or something. Or that would be very. I just don't know how they get there, but we'll see.
We all think the battle is going to be in the north. You know, I remember talking about this years ago on, you know, just in the books that, like. I always assumed that the North would be overrun and, like, the main battle is going to be at King's Landing or, like, at the Neck or somewhere.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So
the
it's not going to be that far
that's
where
it always
away.
Is.
Yeah, of course, just on a grander scale. But
I mean, honestly, with Cersei, I feel like her story is kind of over. She's technically won the throne, which is what she always wanted. Her children are dead, and she can fuck Jaime whenever she wants because she's the queen. So I feel like there's only one way to go here.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, did you see Jaime's face when he's like, you invited the Greyjoys? And he's, you know, shitting on the Greyjoys. And she's like, yeah, he came here for a queen. And it's sort of like, oh, I'm going to marry him. And he was like, what the fuck? No. You know what I've done? You know what we've been through? And you're just going to go marry some other dude? Like, you know, I mean, she doesn't, but he had a look on his face.
Jaime had a look on his face the whole time. I will say I was impressed, going back to Dany, that she didn't do the grand, like, sitting down in the throne and, you know, all that. I was definitely expecting her to take that path. So good for her.
This is a very minor.
Going straight to the war table.
Yes. This is a very minor detail, but I don't like how they made her wear heels. I thought that was a little weird. But I know that that's just me being really nitpicky.
Her outfit's really good this season.
She was wearing heels?
Oh yeah, my god, I love her costume.
Her costume was amazing, but she had heels on. And I was like,
Amelia
Clark's short. Oh my god.
Also, she's queen.
Do they have high heels in this universe?
They do now. Boots. Like, she was wearing heeled boots and not, like, boots. They were, like, very nice boots.
I'll have to look again. Where would she have gotten
those?
So there was, like, a merchant
what's
on
your
the
problem
ship somewhere?
With her having very nice boots?
No, I...
Her army, you're not, you know, she's very
it's
regal, but it's...
not comfortable for walking up all those stairs.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I know what you mean, Casey. I also found the same... I saw the same thing, and I was just kind of like, oh, Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it's very nitpicky. Amelia Clark did a great job. Her outfit looked amazing. I just was like, why is she wearing boots? It's like breasts on a breastplate.
Nipples on a breastplate.
yeah, that's what I meant.
Breasts on a nipple plate.
Nipple plates are a completely
traditionally, breasts and nipples are on the breastplate for a reason. I mean,
I'm just going to shut up for the rest of the...
deflect swords in a specific way.
Ooh.
I like Shamey Nipple Plate as a the porn name of someone in this
movie. But you know what?
I would have liked it if when she was running her fingers along that table, she got to the other side and in the dust there was just a Melisandre butt print left there from...
Santa's got laid here.
or maybe like some leech husks and she's like, what's this?
Yeah.
Well, since I'm going to be living here, Grey Worm, really... grab the black light. Oh, hell!
What would have been great is if, like, she turns a corner and then, like, Gendry's there with, like, a raggedy beard, like, oh, hey, haven't had a visitor in a while.
I've been squatting.
Welcome
here.
To my kingdom.
I'm actually not convinced that's not going to happen.
Westerosi law, Gendry's after a year, bring became mine. If you want it, you have to take it.
To Dragonstone. It's known.
I'm excited about this season.
I'm just happy.
I've
so much to an episode. That's shame.
I wish we could have like the first two or three episodes right now.
Yeah,
that's frustrating, and especially because we only have. Well, I thought we had eight this year. Somehow it's only seven. So I don't know.
We're already on episode four. Episode four next week.
Yeah.
It's almost over, guys.
And I mean, this is like, I think I said the past few years, it's like, I think it would have been better as like a premiere episode that was 2 hours and a finale that was 2 hours. And then you have less weeks airing. So now we have less weeks airing, but also they didn't really extend the episodes.
Oh, but they are.
Yeah.
They're a little bit extended.
Maybe 1 minute.
No, the final two are like
an hour and a half.
Like an hour and a half.
Yeah, an hour and a half each, yeah.
And I think they're talking about like next season, whenever they actually air it. It's supposed to be like possibly each episode's going to be like 90 minutes.
Oh my God, that's
even
so
though only,
the
even though it's only six.
What's the point of cutting them down then? Is it just from a plotting or like a pacing point of view or a production?
Plotting, pacing, or production.
I don't think
you're doing six
90
minute episodes. That's
they
more
shoot
than
this all at the same
10.
Time, right? So I don't think it's a production thing, but. I mean, I don't know. I think an hour and a half, like a cinematic experience each week. Like, I don't know. How are you going
to
top that?
I got shit to do.
So it was great. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for joining me, everyone. And we will, let's see, next week, what do we have? Episode two is called Stormborn. And that one is written by Brian Cogman. And then the third episode is David and Dan again, it looks like. And who knows what that'll be about, but I'm sure it'll be interesting. So we'll see you all then.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks,
bye.
Adam.
Thank you.
Bye.
Then have a good
started.
Time.
Bye.
Which one is
Ed
Sheeran?
Hold on a second. Can we?
What's wrong with Ed Sheeran?
Yeah, can
who
we
is
stop
Ed
and
Sheeran?
Ask what's up with
the
Ed
Sheeran?
He
was
the
one who was singing.
He's got a great voice.
No, yeah. No, it's not his voice. I just really dislike ham-fisted cameos. It would have been anyone if Chris Martin was in that scene or any singer.
Okay,
yeah, it's all the cameos.
No,
he's against
been,
Ed Sheeran.
Like,
it seems like he enjoys
Snow
this
Patrol
kind of stuff.
And everything.
And he's tried to get into a number of shows, you know, in recent years. I think he's like trying to start an acting career, but at this point, yeah, it's more of just like, hey, look, it's Ed Sheeran. So it does take you out of the episode. I can see that.
Yeah, I just dislike cameos. It's not personal. It's a general hatred.
What band is he in? Does he have a band?
He has his own.
No,
he's
a singer-songwriter.
And he's
there,
and he is
other
really
bands,
good.
I think other bands have actually made much more money off of his songs.
Name a song that he's done.
I don't know.
That one he did on SNL.
That one song.
18, Shape of You.
Where he's like, yeah, the Shape of You. That
he
says
just had
that
his...
line.
He did the closing, the credit song for the Desolation of Smaug, which was the only good thing about that movie.
Oh, I like that song.
Yeah, that's a beautiful
song.
Well,
there we go. Look, we've won.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's done stuff that you've heard. I don't really know what his songs are.
Yeah, I feel like he's done a lot of behind the scenes kind of.
I know he has one called Lego House. Yes. I don't know what song that is, though.
I feel in 5 years he'll be writing the
heads everything on is their, awesome.
No, that was Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah, well, like, he was on The Bastard Executioner, and he wrote, like, the theme song for that, and he's, I mean, he does a lot of songwriting, I know that much.
I watched 12 seconds of that TV show before I did.
that show was, it was so bad, I had to watch it. I can do
better accent than Katie Siegel does in that movie, TV show.
Wait a minute, are you Irish or Russian?
I don't know, she was from the East.
He was Professor Diggory from Chronicles of Narnia.
All right, I'm drawing a freaking blank on Chronicles. Are you talking about the movies or the books? Because I don't remember Diggory
In the movie, Jim Broadbent plays the professor in the first Chronicles of Narnia.
The guy whose house they're
Narnia,
staying at?
Like, the house, right.
And if you read the books.
Like,
I read the books. Later, I don't remember Diggory.
You'll know that Diggory started the Link of Narnia.
That's the whole thing. Right. But anyway, in the book, when he comes and they're talking about how crazy Lucy is, and like, well, do you know her to be a liar? Like, you know, and he's just like, well, I kind of just believe you. And they're a little shocked, right? So it's sort of the same thing he does with Sam. But anyway.
Okay. So I don't remember that in the book or the movie. And this
depends
is not
Game of Thrones.
The way that it was written, I thought she didn't go to heaven because she was into BDSM.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa. Let me Google Narnia BDSM and see what.
Hold on.
There's like,
no,
there's like this whole thing.
Because this is great
on?
After show.
This is not going in the after show. This is the whole thing about Susan, and like, it's interesting to read because she gets the shaft, unfortunately. But anyway.
Well,
are we all here?
Are
we ready to do this?
She likes the shaft. That's why she doesn't get to heaven.
God, Adam, you're so mean. Zach never started this podcast with a lecture.
Oh my god!
Why won't you let me be my millennial self?
I'm gonna turn this podcast around.
Oh damn! Oh, come on, Dad.
You're not our real Dragoncast Dad.
That's going in the after show. All right, and there you have it. We're off to a great start.
I miss
okay.
Zach.
So, fuck you.
I miss Zach, too.
I am firmly in Adam's camp. I've got your back, Adam. Let's make these people sorry.
I'm going to give your castles to people who are loyal to me. Anyway.
Give me their castles. Give me their castles, please.
I was kind of going to skip Lemon Cakes because it just aired and it's kind of fresh.
Heresy.
Okay. Okay, then. Lemon Cakes, then. Fine.
Greg, stop brown nosing.
No one remembers anyone's ratings from any episode ever. Let's just talk about the episode.
I think Todd's Plight always gave good Lemon Cakes because he was very precise.
Yes, he was. Good.
I think
he was. Greg, is it working now?
Zach would never have let this happen.
Yeah, I was going to say that because I knew Paul was going to say that. Reading Rainbow. You got to put the Reading Rainbow music in right there, Adam.
The more you know.
Look, the Reading Rainbow.
That's copyrighted. I'm gonna
can't.
We can talk about it. We have to talk about it. As long as we talk about it, it's
I don't think a person singing a song for like 2 seconds is copyright. But.
Tell that to YouTube. I'm just kidding.
That's not a person. You're not a person until you're 25.
You're still a psycho. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Was anyone else recording?
You asked that at the beginning.
I believe I am still somehow.
Yeah, I figured I could count on you too.